Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of our beautiful pod.
How we still doing? Don't have a name.
We'll get there, Brendan.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. We're thinking of some funny ones. Maybe we'll drop them as an Easter egg of some sort. In another episode that is coming.
Some more creepy, far too inside local Boston references.
They might enjoy the fake accents. Anyways,
or they might not.
I think today we have a topic that hits home for us. Something we both spend a lot of time consuming, and that really is
pizza.
I don't know. You have some little kids. Maybe they eat a lot more pizza than
dude. I love pizza.
Than I do. No, everyone loves pizza.
So good.
But no, we're gonna go with audio and the rise of audio consumption. Whether it's on our AirPods in our car, at home you're cooking dinner, maybe you have some pods on or some music. I think generally the trend is, I'll say certainly a younger generation is consuming more audio than ever before.
Yep.
But they are consuming them in different ways. You know, I for one really don't listen to the radio as much as I could say, you know, my mom or dad. I actually had this conversation with my mom last week, and I said, she was talking about something she heard on the radio, blah blah, and I said, isn't it like radio dead? Just threw it out there. It's like, well, I still listen to it for this and that, but
like AM FM stuff.
Just like FM radio. I think, you know,
I haven't seriously listened to an FM radio station since 2008.
That's a very long
maybe.
Time. Over 10 years?
Yeah.
Not even NPR or sports?
Really,
that's
no.
What I'm listening for, you know, maybe on the way to work for 20 minutes.
I got into the whole listening to podcasts scene early when it first started going, and I just never got out of it because it kept getting better.
Sure, yeah.
Like way, way better.
Right, and we've seen an explosion, I mean, in podcasts. You know, last year alone, I saw a number that said, on average, there were 575 podcasts started every day. Just in 2018. I mean,
every day?
Every day.
Hey.
And I think that's why you saw, like, Spotify acquire, you know, Gimlet Media and Anchor. And we sort of covered that in a different pod. But, no, where I was going with this is, my parents got a new car, and it came with a year free of Sirius FM radio.
Oh, the Sirius XM thing?
Right, yeah. Sorry, Sirius XM. That's how, like, non-topical it is for me. And I was thinking, like, do you really need that? I mean, are people really seeking out those maybe, like, five or six, you know, Howard Stern-type stars who are signed into those agreements and really want Sirius? Because the alternative is pods.
Yeah.
And the stars are also there, and you know, I'd actually be surprised if those Howard Sterns of the world don't have a podcast that sort of lends itself to the same listening experience without the exclusive payment, you know, package.
Yeah, I think it's almost something beyond that, right? And I think the on-demand audio thing, whether it's music or podcasts, let's stick on podcasts for now.
Yeah.
I don't think it's AM, FM, and Sirius XM all fall into the same thing where they're not on demand, where you can really control what you're listening, when you're listening, how you're listening, all of that kind of good stuff. So the thing about podcasts is I can pick them up whenever I want to. I can stop them whenever I want to. I can listen to them in 1.5 or 2 times speed to get through more content. I can skip over entire sections, like if they're reading commercials or whatever.
I can skip the ads for the first minute, or like the Joe Rogan ones, I skip for maybe
like 17 minutes.
First 10 minutes.
Yeah. but yeah, no, like I don't think it's really about the personalities that are driving people to be like, oh God, I've got to stay on FM or XM or whatever. I think it's much more about, we live in an on-demand consumption world nowadays, and you're seeing the same thing with like cord-cutting apps with,
I was gonna say
with
Netflix
YouTube TV
or video.
And Netflix.
Can I binge
and all
a pod
that
like
jazz.
I
right,
can binge
right.
Game of Thrones?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and I think it's really much more about that on-demand. I control what I'm consuming when I'm consuming it, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, I have to be a captive audience to something. And then, I don't know if you remember this, but back in the day when you would have to like pull your car up to a parking spot and get out of said car, whatever conversation you were in the middle of just goes away.
Yeah.
You can't get back to it. It's gone. So
right.
It's like, oh, that was really interesting. Oh, I'm at work. I can't ever get back to this conversation, which sucked.
Yeah.
So I think that on-demand thing is a pretty powerful piece of why audio, music, TV, all the multimedia stuff is going much more to a on-demand consumption model mm-hmm. versus one where it's like a passive advertiser model.
I think that's a good sticking point on just how we think FM might, how FM will perhaps die off like AM did because of that on-demand nature of consumers. So you look at, NPR. I really only listen to NPR to check in on the news, and then I move to that pod or I open Spotify. NPR, though, has these shows that are all consumable through a podcast that are uploaded by the end of the day, really. Same thing with Marketplace. Same thing with, different, sports radio stations. They're all moving towards that model.
Yep.
When no one's listening on those airwaves anymore, and I don't think it's going to be 10, maybe even 20 years, maybe even further than that, but let's say it's 30 or 40 years from now. I mean, how are those companies able to stay alive, right? Or is it really just the personality is the one raking in the money because they are really the show and they're really what makes, that drum beat?
I don't know. There becomes a question over time around consumer behavior mm-hmm. here. So active versus passive consumers, right? So active ones like you and I go out, we cultivate our podcast feeds, we cultivate our music playlists, we decide what we want to listen to, when we want to listen to it, and it's part of that ownership of the content that you're interacting with. I think that percentage of the population is going to grow over time, but I still think it's a small percentage of the population. I think a lot of people are still very much passive, and I turn on radio, I get thing, and I don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
And frankly, there's a lot of people who like that.
Yeah. It's also a way to discover new music and new content sometimes.
Sure.
I think, personally, I've always hated, the top 100 Billboard, radio cycle.
Yep.
But there's also a bunch of contracts behind the scenes, whether it is, music or sports, that keep those stations alive.
Right.
So I guess, I can still see them making money, but probably not being as popular if I, let's say the Red Sox are on my way home today and I turn on that, radio station to listen to it. Well, I can also do that on an app that radio station has.
Sure.
So, I'm not sure the contracts really muddy those things. It's just, are you going to keep the amount of listeners engaged in that way, or will they just always default to Spotify, podcast, app of their choice to consume it? It's tough to tell.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a few radio stations that have really tried to go down the digital delivery route.
Yeah.
iHeart Radio is one of them.
Sure.
So they've got that one out there where they're always streaming their live FM broadcast feeds on there. And I guess they've kind of done okay with it. Time will tell. I do still think we're going to go towards more of an ownership model over time.
Do you think there is a strong connection between, what will, voice commands and, you have some AirPods, I don't, but what an AirPod would enable you, or other versions of AirPods, how that connection of kind of always having something in your ear, translating to not only, music and podcasts, but switching between that to work meetings, phone calls, is there a case almost to be made that the AirPods really shouldn't come out because you can now command a lot more things and really run your daily lifestyle through that audio medium?
So this is, I'm going to take a bit of a different approach to that question, because I think that this is more of a technology trends question. This is much more the, have we reached peak screen, right? Mm-hmm. So TVs, tablets, phones, whatever, and that's how we interact, or how we have for the past 10, 20 years, primarily interacted with stuff. Is through screens. Eyeballs to pixels, that's it.
Yeah.
I would say within the last 3 years, really hypercharged in the last 1 year, give or take, we've begun to see the shift over to ambient computing, right? And that is the stuff is everywhere kind of thing. And if you look at it from a five senses standpoint for us, it's not sight, it's hearing that's the easiest thing to always kind of be connected through. And that is smart speakers a la Echo and Google Home and whoever else is out there. I forgot the HomePod because everyone forgets the HomePod. or AirPods or other things like that, radio, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
It's much easier to always have those things in. So I can always, with the new generation 2 of the AirPods, for example, Siri's always there. I can always just kind of use the wait command and ask it to play music, do podcasts, join a conference call, message a friend, whatever. The same applies to the Echoes and the Homes. Well, less prevalent in a hearables sense, are more prevalent in a smart speaker sense. So I think we are shifting in that direction. I think we're shifting away from screens. I think there's kind of been a recognition that it's distracting us from living life as opposed to interacting with other human beings and kind of doing the right thing here.
Yeah.
So, you know, my kind of utopia and where I think this is driving towards is where I'm pretty sure Apple's got this the right way, which is to say, leave the phone or the tablet or anything else at home when you're out and about, throw on your cellular connected Apple Watch with your AirPods, and then interact with the things you need to get done that way. Phone calls,
just
you can check your email.
It's
much more light touch. It much more makes you a part of the world. And then when you need to reconnect, fine. You're back in front of a thing and you can do the thing in front of it. But it doesn't fuck up like Sunday dinners and going to church and hanging out with your friends and interacting with your kids on a hike or any of that stuff. Like, you get to be present but still connected.
It's an interesting kind of like, it's an interesting world. In that future, you'd never think you'd move towards a more hands-off approach or just like society. You'd always think, you know, we have the phones now, it can only be accelerated. And I think a lot of people thought not audio would be the trend to maybe be the next like 10 or 20 years of innovation where things get more accessible, more easy, tasks are automated perhaps. They really did think it was going to be visual. Google Glass, right?
Well, they thought it was going to be visual because it was the only paradigm that we knew.
Sure.
Like, but the other one hadn't hit maturity yet.
Right. But visual in the sense of, they went to the extent of like, you can get contacts that are going to have, you know, a chip in them and blah, blah, blah. And you can, it's like,
I still think AR is coming. Not VR.
I'm saying as a category. Though.
I don't care about VR because I don't think that's going anywhere. What I'm talking
AR is here as far as Snapchat.
Well, I'm talking about that paradigm of the being able to go out and live your life kind of thing, but have it augmented and connected without it getting in the way.
Right.
I hang my theory on that off of a lot of Apple's patents and the whispers around what they're trying to do with their smart glasses.
Yep.
That may be released in 2020.
Yeah,
who knows? If that goes down that road, you get textual overlay on the world without it being all-consuming, right? So it's
maybe. So I think that's the dangerous part of where AR could go. Of, can I have multiple windows opened up, you know, through my glasses? Let's say where I'm not even seeing the world around me. I'm just kind of living in maybe the visual and audio world of like a computer for a better sense, but like my brain, my eyes, my ears, my mouth are really what operates it.
Yeah.
Not my fingers.
Yeah.
I think it's a very interesting shift from maybe what people thought 10 years ago of like, you know, AR being perhaps a good focal point for like technology innovation. And I think audio has secretly, not even from like really, really like one emerging company or product, but just from a cultural standpoint of people want to consume more podcast or music on their own terms. I think that alone has like lent itself to a lot more, you know, success and innovation to be had.
Yeah, I agree, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
No, I think it happened pretty naturally. It happened pretty naturally, and if you look at it, it sort of happened the way that one would expect it to. So, the two trends and forces here that I look at is personal autonomy,
mm-hmm.
right? So people want to have control over the things in their life. The more you give them the ability to have that control, the more that they're going to take it, which I think is a good thing. And you want, I think the human animal with the technology paradigm wants things that enhances their sort of five senses without consuming them in its entirety. And I think what we're going to see over the long arc of history is that the screen addiction stuff was just a blip, because it was the early stages of how computing was going to interact with us. I think as we move forward here, it's going to become much more, I mean, let's just face it, everything's kind of driven by Star Trek. I think it's going to become much more that sort of ambient everywhere sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're almost there. The big gotcha on that one, and we've talked about this before, is going to be the AI interfaces to help with this. Apple's got the hardware.
Yeah.
And I think that they can continue to iterate on that. Siri's got to get a lot smarter to be able to,
to make audio really useful. Yeah.
Well, to really make that world work better.
Right. And Apple usually takes that more simplistic approach, but I think it could be as early as the next iPhone this September/October, where you see maybe really a strong message from Apple that says, the new AirPods came out, you know, in the spring, here's the new iPhone, and these set of 100 commands we have, like, perfected, because they are the most used, like, most likely for you to, the thing that's going to make your day go smoother, whether it's, you know, replying to a voicemail through a text message, or like just other like quick hot commands through the AirPod as a listening and, you know, Siri device. I feel like we're just not there yet. And it's almost surprising that wasn't I know it was a selling point with the first AirPods, but it quickly just kind of became this like, I don't know. Like, can I really just do my meetings? That's all I need to do, right? Can I listen to audio? And can I manage my, you know, work meetings through AirPods efficiently? That was like the big winner, right? But we never got those direct Siri.
Well, we have it now in the Gen 2s.
No, sure. I'm saying when it first came out, though, it was like, man, like, I can't even tell Siri to do some pretty basic tasks I needed to do through my AirPods. Like, hey, Siri, please open up Gmail, send to this person, write this message, and go.
Yeah.
Now I know it's complex. It's not easy to build.
But it's not even
and
that.
It's also not their app all the time.
It's getting there.
But is that app ecosystem ready to be worked on? Like, is that kit out?
So no, I think it is. So Siri kit's out, right?
Yeah.
That's out there. Developers have been using it for a while. You've got shortcuts, Siri shortcuts that came out with iOS 12, which is lovely.
Mm-hmm.
The and with shortcuts, you can do damn near anything that you really want to automate through a simple command. The problem is, shortcuts is not end user friendly yet, right? Like, I can sit there and if the mood strikes me, I can write up whatever I want to do.
But that's not
anything.
Helpful. That's
fine.
Just for you.
Right. And I'm not most people when it comes to that. So it's got to get a lot smarter by itself at just doing the NLP and then executing against that. Like, Google's got that sort of magic sauce figured out. Like, 90% of the time when I ask it some random ass thing, it's like, yep, gotcha, off I go.
Yeah.
90% of the time when I ask Siri something standard, it goes, let me refer you to the internet for that, which is not useful.
I'm not even talking about questions, though. I'm talking about
just basic commands. Yeah,
I can't believe I still like dial in like a 6-digit PIN to a conference meeting. Like, oh my god, how can I not just join because I'm already authenticated? In like
depends. Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Like, and it depends on which app you've got. It depends on how it's
reconfigured. I'm not saying, like, I like WebEx.
It depends on how the code was sent to you. It depends on all that stuff. It's aggravating. It'll get there.
Yeah.
It'll get there. I think Siri's catching up.
Good.
So, that was, I mean, that's the audio thing. That's the podcast thing. That's the kind of the hardware layer and where I see that stuff going. Let's flip to music for a quick second.
Let's do it.
If we can.
Before we start, can I just throw a question out there?
Yeah.
How the hell are companies like Pandora and Shazam still afloat? Is it just advertising? Like, have they really captured that many users who aren't going to leave Pandora Radio?
So Shazam was bought by Apple. That's how afloat. Yeah.
Okay. I was unaware.
Pandora was bought by SiriusXM. I believe.
You might be right.
You might want to fact check me on that one, but I'm pretty sure that they were. That's how they're still alive. The other thing with Pandora was that they kind of had the first mover advantage thing going.
Yeah, there were a few other competitors at that time. Yeah, SiriusXM does own Pandora Media.
Yeah.
I guess it's more of a question of how is Pandora still like thriving and like why does the stock market still care about that? Because I just think companies like Spotify, or we've recently, I saw an announcement that Apple Music has surpassed Spotify in users. Mm-hmm. Was that active users or just?
Yeah, it was active users, yeah.
It's incredible. I don't know how.
You don't know how?
No, I just.
Oh, Apple. The Apple Music.
This is the paid Apple Music version, right?
Yeah.
So that it was surprising to me. But I still don't understand how Pandora is like a focal point for people.
So,
SiriusXM, right? Like these two sort of things I can see sort of dying off and moving towards the more I'm going to work for myself model,
so
whether
I think,
I'm an artist or a creator.
Yeah, so I think SiriusXM and Pandora are both going to die over time. I don't see any way that they don't, to be fair. the Apple Music one is an easy one to answer. The reason that it is a success is the same reason that Apple News Plus is going to be a success. Oprah.
Yeah, now I hear
that. They're in a billion pockets, and they just got that lock-in.
Yeah.
The second you open up an iPhone, it's like, hi, I'm here. Oh, you want to play music? Here's the default music player.
Mm-hmm.
And most people are like, yes, give me that.
Yeah.
Frankly, that's the benefit of having the hardware in people's faces is that you can put your own services out there more easily.
Oh, we did a whole pod on Apple versus Spotify.
We did. So there's that, and I think people just take the path of least resistance naturally. But if I'm looking at it even from a technologist standpoint, I kind of am allured to using more and more of Apple's default services just because they work more seamlessly and easily as I'm trying to get through life, right?
Yeah, there's got to be some killer features from the competitor to really persuade you to not use
If I'm driving along and I just want to do a, hey Siri, play blah, 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 like, that works every time. If I'm driving along and I want to use...
Siri.
Oh, she's alive. Yeah. If I'm driving
Siri along, is responding to you.
Of course. If I'm driving along and I want to use... Don't say it. And I want to use YouTube Music, for example. Well, then I got to take my eyes off the road, and I got to play around on the screen, and then click the button and do the thing. Like, it's a level of lock-in, but it's also a level of interoperability that works really well for life. And then you can argue this one as well, but the fact that Apple Music is, I know Spotify's got an app for the Apple Watch, but it's the only one that really, really works well with the watch.
Yeah.
Like, if I just want my stuff to follow me around where I go, you kind of go with the service layer that's built with the hardware layer.
Yeah. I think there are some killer features, though, that I like in Spotify that really... They're things I wouldn't trade in for Apple Music.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the social aspect of Spotify. So I can see I don't have a lot of, like... close friends in the Spotify playlist.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't make their profiles public or they use different usernames, but I'd like to see more of a plugin of like, hey, these are your Twitter or address book friends who are on here. Do you want to add them? It's cool to see what my friends are listening to while I'm listening to music.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really nice feature on the desktop app. I don't think it's on the mobile. And to go one step further, sharing playlists with other people. Maybe we get to the point where we're building playlists with other users.
Yeah.
I still think like the entire music industry, for whatever reason, it's just the whole social aspect has still been untapped, and I've never really understood why.
So,
in every
of the major, well, like the major platforms I can think of anyway, they all have got a social kind of spin they try and put on them. Like,
but not
Apple
like,
Music's got it, where they're like, oh, your friends are listening to
no,
this.
But,
and
yeah,
punk.
Not like I want to share on Twitter or Instagram.
No. They'll do the whole active, your people are listening to this
okay.
stuff. You should check it out as well. I just don't find that compelling. Like,
okay.
I listen to music because I want it to be the music I want to listen to. Like, maybe there's a benefit in from a discovery aspect to say, oh, I know Matt likes the same music I do.
Mm.
Maybe I can find something that is new I haven't heard yet. But frankly, I think music is one of those things that is just a highly personal preference thing, and people just want to have their own music. Like, social doesn't really belong in a music app.
I disagree. I'd say, where do I find my favorite new music of the past few years? From my friends who have similar tastes in music as me, and vice versa for them.
Yeah.
There was a very, very cool website in, had to have been back in like 2012, called turntable.fm. I don't know if you ever used it.
No.
I don't think it was very popular, and ended up shutting down. But it was basically a social media website that allowed users to interactively share music. So there would be different, I guess we'll call them, you know, concert stage social media rooms, right? Almost like a chat room. And you could sync in songs that you have on your desktop, or you could pull from other services and add them to the playlist. And people would gather in this room and then start commenting, I really like this song, whatever. So whatever you're listening to, and this is almost like an oddly, what's the right word for it? It's not curated, but it's almost like an upvoting type, you know, crowdsourced way of listening to a radio station curated by the people in the room who have similar taste in music. And the rooms you'd be in would be categorized by genre or 80s rock.
Yeah.
You know, coolest thing. I mean, I used it that entire summer I was working and beyond. Super, super, super cool. It was like, in my opinion, the best way to find new music from people who shared similar genre interests, as well as an ability, you know, a way for me to share what I'm listening to and for other people to get
that
benefit.
But isn't that the whole point behind sort of the genre playlists that are in all of the music apps right now? And that was the whole thing that Pandora really got off
on. I think it's automated
it,
though. It's automated it to a point where I can almost predict what the next song's going to be.
Yeah. Right,
and that's my problem. I'm not saying it's always bad. I love some of the Spotify playlists.
You're just saying the human randomness element isn't there any longer.
Yeah, and like, there's also always going to be that guy in the room. I think it was probably even me a few times. He says, "How about this local band that you've really never heard of?"
Yeah.
And I'm putting their song up there, and that's a way for that band to get exposure.
That's a good point.
I mean, so I don't know. I guess I'm still harping on the social media aspect of music, but I think another...
Didn't Facebook try that at one point? Didn't Facebook try a Facebook music thing where they were like, hey, you'll love all the... Like, it was a take on the MySpace thing.
I was just going to say, MySpace and Pure Volume were like the original ones,
yeah.
Right? And MySpace was great for music.
And
all the bands had their own page with their playlist right there. And
they've lost all of your data from like 2012 forward.
Tom is no longer our friend.
No, Thomas is no longer your friend.
Justin Timberlake bought it at one point and tried to relaunch it as a social music service.
So weird.
Yeah.
All right. There's one more topic I just want to touch on.
Sure.
Before we go here. Help me understand this. I look at all of the major music streaming services that are out there, and I keep wanting to try them all, but I always come back to, and this is going to sound really, really strange, I come back to YouTube Music every time, and it's for this reason only.
Mm-hmm.
They've all got basically the same music, they've all got basically the same sort of curation ability, all of that stuff is there, but when I purchased my YouTube Premium subscription so that I don't have to deal with bloody ads on YouTube, and I can give it to all the members of my family. YouTube Music comes along for the ride, and I get the whole thing. I don't know of any other service out there that when I buy it, I get that much of an additional ancillary benefit, such as no ads in YouTube, and I have no idea why I would switch.
Well, Spotify doesn't have ads if you pay the $10 a month.
But they don't give you YouTube ad-free.
Understood. And
they don't give you anything besides music.
Yeah, I hear you.
YouTube Music gives you...
In pods, it's changing. I think it's changing. Yeah. I agree. When you already have that YouTube infrastructure and millions of videos, I think... I don't know the numbers in front of me, but I feel like I heard this in the last year, that YouTube is still the number one way for people to listen to music.
So, yes.
Globally.
Yes.
Most people don't have access to Spotify or can't afford a $10 premium music, subscription. YouTube, though, and I still have friends now who can't afford Spotify. They still use YouTube when they go home. They know the song's going to be there. It's saved.
Yeah.
It's easy. Ads or no ads, they still do it. It's a very interesting trend. Do you think they can keep it up that for this long? I mean, do we think audio is going to, move down a path where... Let's just take music.
I think that's why they already saw the competitive advantage that they had with YouTube as a music player.
Right.
Right? And then they said, well, we've got this Google Play Music thing over here that's just like every other music streaming service. If we collapse these two together, we get a immediate competitive advantage from the YouTube side of thing, plus all of the streaming stuff that we've already got with Google Play Music. Ta-da!
But they're still separate. They're still chopped up.
Google Play Music's going away.
That's my problem with it.
It's going to become YouTube Music.
Aired our dirty laundry with that of like, why is... The new launch of YouTube Music was incredibly confusing from a services standpoint of what I had versus what I now have with YouTube Red, and I still have Google Play Music, and my head's exploding. I'm like, I just want one now.
Yeah.
I think most people who listen to music on YouTube don't have that experience. They're just listening to music on YouTube.
Yeah.
They're not also subscribing to Google Play Music or other things, but it is an interesting competitive advantage and one that's going to be sort of like an immovable object for a very long time.
I don't see how other companies can get around it. Now,
artists aren't going to go anywhere else to upload their music.
Totally.
I mean, first and foremost, it's YouTube.
Totally. Yeah. So here's the thing, and this is why I think Spotify is in a weird spot over time. You've got YouTube, which has got that advantage, and it's just ubiquitous everywhere.
Mm.
Then you've got Apple, which has got the hardware kind of lock-in advantage, and then you've got this little slice of the pie where Spotify was trying to play. But they don't have the other advantages that these two massive players have.
Don't tell me we're going to see a Spotify phone.
We're not going to see
that. Like Amazon tried, right?
No. We're not going to see a Facebook phone. We're not going to see a Spotify phone. We're not going to see an Amazon Fire phone. That's done.
Yeah.
It's
a good point, though. Maybe Spotify, there are some much bigger challenges ahead that no one's really talking about right now.
The benefit that Spotify has is that is its business and it's focused on that. And to your point before, like, the rollout of YouTube Music being the new kind of be-all and end-all for their music subscription service has been a fucking nightmare as far as messaging it and marketing it appropriately. But this is Google. This is what happens with all of their stuff that they put out there in the world. It's like, it's a thing, and it'll work, and it works great, but they market it in a just ridiculously horrible way.
Yeah. Now, and just before we go here, I said in the beginning of the show, Spotify did acquire Gimlet Media and Anchor. Maybe, I'm sure they've already done their homework on where can we bite off a piece of that pie as far as really any audio market's concerned. It looks like podcasts and music for the time being is really what, where they see the most opportunity. Mm-hmm. I think they really want to cut in that podcast game, knowing that things like the YouTube stranglehold on music or not owning the hardware like an iPhone will continue to hurt them in the long run. So
it's gonna really suck for the podcast kind of industry if they get away from the delivery system that they've been using, which has just been RSS feeds, just open access RSS feeds to the world. Anybody can get them anywhere.
Like licensing agreements. If
they start putting them behind walled garden kind of paywall stuff.
Why wouldn't it happen? Happen with the music industry.
No, happen with television, right? No.
I agree. I don't want it to happen. I think the most beautiful thing for podcasts has been how
it's open.
How open it is. How easily digestible it is, and that I, as a listener, am like compelled to donate to someone's cause or buy some sort of, I almost feel obligated to like pay some of these podcasters some money.
Oh, me too.
Because I listen to them and learn so much from them on a week to week basis.
Yeah, me too.
So,
me too.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, there. You can give us money if you want. Actually, you can.
I don't think we're that desperate.
No, we're not. All right.
All right, wonderful. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.